On Fridays, this meeting will not be live. It will be on Zoom. And it is a round table, which is usually a little bit more informal. And that runs from 6:30 until 7:30. We are looking at Mr. Judge's Echoes from the Orient, and it will be section 8. And for those of you who don't have any of these books, they can all be found on the Phoenix ULT website, and that's phx-ult-lodge@aol.com. No, .org, sorry. Okay, so as we said, we are going to be looking at karma and reincarnation. Okay. So when people look at this idea of karma and reincarnation, it's kind of strange when you talk to somebody, especially when you go, when you're looking at it through theosophical eyes. When somebody says, what is karma and reincarnation, or you ask them, what is karma? And sometimes they say, karma, you know, karma will get you. What does that mean, karma will get you? And usually they mean, well, you know, if they did something wrong, they'll say, oh, well, so-and-so, karma will get you. That, whatever that means, we don't know. And they certainly feel as though if karma is going to get them, well, you know, something bad will happen to them at some point. They don't understand the long-term effect of karma. And, you know, and when they look at reincarnation, they look at the idea of, oh, I hope I come back as, you know, as some beautiful woman or a handsome man, that I have a lot of money. But reincarnation just doesn't work that way. And this is what we're going to see. The first talk will look at this idea of karma and reincarnation. The second talk will look at this idea of the doctrine of hope. So, so actually, when we look at karma, it is beneficent. And people can say, what do you mean by beneficent? Karma kind of, you know, it comes back. It gives you what you deserve. Sure, it does. It's responsibility. It's responsibility that we all have. It's the choices that we have made in a previous life that we have to take charge of in this life. And it's not, karma isn't linear. It's not what I do in this life will come back to me in the next. It's what I do in this life, the universe will have to balance out at some point. Reincarnation, which is the vehicle for karma. So when we do something that has to be balanced out, reincarnation will then, it's not, we don't want to say it picks, because the soul picks what life will be, what the life will be that will handle the lessons that that soul has to learn. So when we're looking at it being beneficent, when that soul comes back, it is so that it can learn the lessons. And as with evolution, as we move through each life, then each life, we hope, will get better until we are perfected. So karma means action and reaction. So whatever we do, there will be a reaction to it. And that's what the universe has to balance out. So what you sow, so shall you reap. It is looked at as being the law of ethical causation. And there are three classes of karma. The first one is what is waiting, what hasn't produced any effects as yet. That means that that is what is waiting in the background that we have made in the past that hasn't been, that isn't ready to be worked on yet. So the second one is what we are making now and storing. So it's what we are making now, what we are doing now is it's in abeyance. And at some point in time, it will come out and we will have to work on it. We will have to learn those lessons. And then of course, there's the third type, that which has begun to produce results in this life. So it will produce those results now. So the word fatalism comes up a lot when people who don't understand karma. And it's not fatalism because we have choices. And those choices are, you know, we have to, as thinking beings, we can see the results of those choices. We can see that if something comes to us, that if it's our duty, as in the Gita talks a lot about duty, then our duty will be what comes to us, what karma has brought to us. So in this life, since we have reincarnated into this life, then we have the choices that we can make that will, in the future, hopefully, it will be a better choice for us. So because we have those choices, the duties that come to us, those situations that come to us, yes, they have come to us through karma. And it may feel like fatalism, but if we take it a step further, we will see that indeed we have the choice to change the future of that karmic expression. Because we are thinking beings. We know what the results will be. So we don't have to take that fatalistic approach to what it is. Even if we are born in a physically unhealthy body, we still have a mind. And that mind can accept our lot in life. And we can help others with some of the same issues. We can still be thankful for the fact that we can still think, that we can talk, even if our form is not the best at this time. So, so karma also works on our mental and intellectual nature, our psychic or soul nature, and our physical circumstances. So we could have a perfect body, but we could have a mental or intellectual nature that maybe is not that strong. But even if we have somebody who is mentally not capable, there is still something that soul can learn. And even if, what's interesting about this is that even if there is a soul who was born into a form that is horribly disabled and is mentally and psychically not capable, that could be something that soul has chosen maybe for the parents to learn something through. So there are always lessons, and no matter what type of life that karma can bring. So as we said, karma affects the person, can affect the country, and can affect the nation. But how do karma and reincarnation work together? Because if there is no reincarnation, there would really be no way for karma to work. And we're looking at this idea of evolution, and it's karma and reincarnation that move evolution along. So reincarnation explains how man has come to be the complex being that he is. And we have to understand that there is a double evolution. There's a physical one and a spiritual one. And that this can only be covered up, and this can only be carried out by reincarnation. And as we said, that it can be looked at as being the vehicle for karma. And when we think of evolution, evolution is for the progress of soul. And this is how it is carried on by karma and reincarnation. But the interesting thing is that it is not the body that reincarnates, because the body dies and disintegrates. So what we're looking at then is the higher triad of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. That is what reincarnates. And that is what reincarnates into another form. And it's karma that can determine what that form will be. So when we recall, people wonder, well, why don't I remember a past life? We do not remember previous lives because we have a new brain. And karma will give us a new brain, and that new brain will not have the memory of those past lives. So we're only able to use that brain for the new life, having no part in the life last lived. So this is why we can't know. It's not that, and plus at this stage of evolution, we can't really handle what our past lives were. We may not be able to handle some of the evil things that we have done until we are more perfected. So reincarnation is, we said, the vehicle for karma. And if we didn't have that, we would not be able to function as we do now. So what is the purpose? Why do we need to know these two incredible ideas of karma and reincarnation? Because by knowing these, we can make the choices, the correct choices, so that when we do reincarnate into a new form, we can make the choices that we need to make in order to perfect ourselves into hopefully a more positive life, and we will be able to perfect ourselves. Thank you. And now we will have our second speaker.
As the first speaker spoke, you perhaps were very aware that the word hope or hopefully appeared three or four times throughout the entire presentation. And so what we'd like to do is to turn the focus from a doctrine of karma, a doctrine of reincarnation, and to look for a few brief moments together on what's the basis of hope that is the underpinning of these two teachings, these two doctrines. Mr. Robert Crosby, a consummate student of the philosophy, once said that humanity sins, sorrows, suffers, and dies a thousand deaths because of what? Just ignorance. ignorance, the loss of information, more than naivete, more than innocence, but ignorance, just the constriction of ideas, the constriction of knowledge, the constriction or the misapplied premise from which all thinking pursues. That is the root of pessimism, of worries, of fears, of sorrows, of suffering. Plato said that ideas rule the world, and indeed they do. And it is in the last 2,000 years or more that thought leaders, especially in the Western Hemisphere, have led individuals, have led souls to believe that they are limited in capacity, that they are lowly sinners, looking at life from the viewpoint of maybe a little wormite view, needing some sort of intermediary between themselves and an external personal God, a savior. And rooted in all of that is a strong intuitive sense of, is this all there is? This doesn't seem fair. Where's true justice? And why not just give up? Where's the hope? Where's the, if I might be predestined from birth by karma or a personal deity to suffer and to have a very limited experience, where's the joy? Where's the bliss of spiritual bloom? Well, there's the key. The basis for hope is what rings true intuitively within each of us, because impressed within each soul, each emanation, please mute, thank you very much. Within each soul, each emanation of the deific force, the great universal unknown or absolute, impressed within is a sense of self-consciousness, a sense of justice, fairness, that must be absolute and without limits. There's a sense, literally, of the ability to grow, to improve, to gain more wisdom and insight and understanding. And there's also a heartfelt intuition, a great impress on doing service, being helpful to others, for having a meaning of life. Even the tiniest child as soul has a sense of, if you broke it, you can fix it or replace it. Even the teeny weeniest child as soul has a sense that one day is not enough, that the day continues, the duration goes on, that they survive deep sleep, that they come back in the morning, and that they exist. And ultimately, frequently, thinkers find themselves looking around for evidence, and we do find evidence of enlightenment, degrees of enlightenment, partial genius perhaps, full genius among the great saviors or mahatmas, or the great sages across time and place. And in all of those suppositions and all of those impresses, all those intuitive degrees of realization, is this infinite interconnectedness, a force, a compassionate love, the ability to serve and improve and uplift. All of that is embedded in the immortality of soul as it's moving through the human state. So as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. And there's the hope. There's tremendous dignity, the root of human dignity, of spiritual validity, is in the doctrine of karma and reincarnation. As soul, if we move from this absolute unknowable as radiations or force of spirit, of soul, of intelligence. And as we use physicality and as we use the astral, we find that by cause and effect, the science of life, we can begin to tinker with how to express those intuitive senses, those intuitive ideals and doctrines that are resident within. How can we begin to perfect the expression of them in thought, word, and deed? So even our political and social institutions, like the United Nations in 1948, declared that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Now, that's from a political, worldly point of view. And therein lies the hope of the theosophical doctrines of karma and reincarnation. If this philosophy is true, if it empowers all in an evolutionary sense, streams of spirit, soul, intelligence, working through matter, then all human beings are capable of this. Not in one finite little life, not in one life followed by eternal damnation, not just at the whim of a fickle personal deity who might have a flavor of the month and favor one instead of another, but rather the hope, the true hope, is the confidence and the understanding that as each of us unfolds by self-fulfilled and self-devised efforts, we are dynamos. We are creative, active, responsible soul. And that as such, we are eternal, we are universal, we are capable of uplifting all manifestations of life, not for ourselves, not to relieve our own pain and suffering, but rather because we have the magical promise, the potentiality of assisting every degree of intelligence in all kingdoms of nature. And I'd like to end with another quote from Crosby, that no matter how much we have transgressed or how little we may have known in the past, as soon as we sense the truth of reincarnation, the process by which law rules karma as force, a compassionate force, we realize that we can set up better causes and make the future we wish. The future, as duration, is eternal. It has no limit. The bodily expression is but one tiny little aspect of what Mr. Crosby was talking about. And while acting in the body, while acting in the world, as we gradually see truly more and more evidence of eternal truth and sustenance underlying all manifestation, we find that we are less involved with the troubles that karma may present for us to learn. We are less troubled by them, we are less involved, and therefore, as dynamic thinkers, as soul, we can look at the karmic results, have confidence that life goes on just as one day follows another, and that we can work within the limits of time and place and condition and reach new spiritual heights. I'm sure that you came to the session this morning with your own observations on the topic, and perhaps you have a question or a comment. MJW, you have your hand up, and then SL.
So, yeah, it's such a deep and wide subject. Sometimes, though, we encounter individuals who just seemed to be in an ironclad box almost, and you just can't seem to reach them, and their situation seems hopeless. And I know it's the doctrine of hope and responsibility. How do we approach such individuals who just seem
like they're locked into a particular point of view, perhaps?
Situation.
I'm afraid. Yeah. Within the circle of students that we operate, within the greater world, the wider world, we do encounter the habitually pessimistic. We do encounter thinkers who have constricted, have boxed themselves in, and they will constantly see a glass half empty, or they will constantly see through fear and superstition or great anxiety. They will see only the negative aspects of the world around them and the possibilities for the future. It doesn't help much to argue with them. Rather, if we affirm, I can see, I understand what you're saying, I can see your pain and your worriment. What worked for me is to look at it from a slightly different angle, and then to offer a little example, a tiny tidbit of what helped us when we were perhaps in darker stages, or when we were still thinking from the basis of a sempiternity and an outside creator God. And in that way, we affirm that we see their suffering. We offer non-directive advice, just this worked for me, consider it, maybe it'll work for you. And Mr. Crosby is very clear that the minute that the term reincarnation is sounded, it's never lost. And it goes on percolating someplace within until finally a realization is reached. Does my co-chair have an extension?
You pretty well covered it, but one of the things that we have learned is that you don't want to say, oh, don't think like that, because then that negates what they're thinking and it puts them on the defensive. And once that happens, you know, you shut them right down. But what was suggested about affirming what they're thinking and then giving something from your point of view doesn't put them on the defensive, but it just may make them think a little differently.
And as students, I know personally across the decades, what was so helpful and continues to be so is when someone senses that I have a need as a student or a human being, and they come up with just the right little reference or just the right little quote from the philosophy, and they gift it and say, you know, this helped me. I thought of you. Maybe this idea or this line of thought might be helpful. And again, what are we doing there? We're recognizing that there's an equal soul in the other. We're recognizing conditions of life are different from that soul, and we're inviting that soul to use their spiritual force to move on, to break the chains of whatever the constriction is. SL, your hand was up before too.
In line with all that has just been said, we understand that reincarnation, those doctrines have universal application. But why is it said that these two doctrines are what the West needs most? What about our West, our ideas, our civilization, makes us need these doctrines more than others? Or media primarily, we should say.
Well, I can take a stab at it first. For over 2,000 years, there have been thought leaders in the West affiliated with a particular form of religion Many of those Christian faiths, the entire spectrum, have many, many sincere followers, true believers who lead theosophically, morally, ethically pure lives as best they can imagine. But what happened when the Western Church was established as part of a power structure, both military, governmental, the control aspect was, how do you control the minds of folks from the Middle East and the Far East and the masses in Europe? How do you control them if they believe that they are soul, that they live or have a duration forever, soul in many different lives? And so there was this institution of declaring reincarnation and karma anathema. It was no longer teachable. It was no longer to be offered. And so those are missing pieces in most of the Western beliefs. And again, this is not to dislodge anybody from their childhood religion or what religion they practice now, but it is an invitation to look into the classical church history of what was declared anathema and when, and how that would influence the basic premise from which people identify as human or soul, as perfectible or horrible, measly little sinners. That is the essence that was so needed anywhere in the West where particular applications of Christianity did missionary work. Hmm. MHW, do you have anything to add?
No, it was totally covered.
Gee. SL, any follow-up?
Yes. It was mentioned that one of the values of the doctrine of reincarnation and karma is it focuses our attention on the evolution of soul. Because as I said, we can be good human beings and aspire, but these doctrines at once point to us that we are soul beings with soul powers and therefore have responsibility for our own evolution. So we were wondering, maybe if somebody's stuck and does not seem immediately receptive of the idea of reincarnation, it's because they haven't woken to the recognition within themselves that they are souls. And once they have that recognition, the soul knows what it needs, and reincarnation karma seems more logical, it makes sense. So how do we help someone understand that there is something in their nature which is intelligent, enduring, not dependent on the body, and so forth, recognition of soul?
Well, we think that many people believe that they have a soul and that when they die, the soul dies with them. And what is needed, we think, is for the person somehow to accept the idea that it's not that they have a soul, but that they are soul. And that this soul will we don't want to say the word live, but we can't think of any other term right now. Will continue for, forever, that it will go into another body at some point. So that, but to try and get someone to understand that is difficult. We know that. And we think that it just requires conversation and talking, because that's a huge shift for somebody to go through. where they're thinking that when they die, that's it, that there's nothing left. But that it may be comforting to some people, especially if they've just lost a loved one, to know that it their loved one isn't out, you know, in the netherworld somewhere.
These are huge concepts, but they can be interpreted for even the tiniest of children. How we use language is really, really important. So whether we're dealing with a teeny weeny child and we say something like, "What a fortunate soul you are," you're using a brain that really can learn. You're using a body that's really healthy. Or, "Look at you, little soul, look what you were able to accomplish." That's one way to do it. Starting with very young ones, they may not be in full command of their self-consciousness yet, but they can hear those words and intuitively, as soul, as budding soul, they can accept that and go on. With folks that are really locked into, "I have a soul, there is no soul," asking very simple questions like, "Is there anything in nature that comes only once?" Or asking someone, "Well, do you recall being in a child body? Do you recall being in a teenage?" But isn't there something continuous, eternal, overseeing, witnessing all the changes of that body? You're not that body, you're something else. Or at other times asking someone, "Gee, you know, when you first come awake in the morning, are you immediately your personality? Or are you immediately the role that you have to play for duties? Or is there a vague, wordless, almost impossible to express sense of I am, just existence, pure existence?" MJW, and then I think MDW had his hand up too.
Yeah, sometimes awakening, we think we're still in that reality of the dream world. If we have a very strong, vivid dream, and it takes us a while to shake that off, and sometimes we're relieved and sometimes we're saddened, but yeah, sometimes we takes a little while to realize to take cognizance of our surroundings, as it were.
Mm-hmm. MDW, your hand was up.
Well, the question that is arising, all these ideas are very comforting. But we look at the world around us and we wonder, what hope is there for humanity? So we ask that question, what hope is there for humanity?
Well, what comes to mind is the question of why are we looking out and judging others? Would we want our soul, would we want us as spiritual energy to be judged by the lowest, most despicable events in our current incarnation? And the answer is no. If we posit that there is an absolute universal source, that from that emanates spirit and then all degrees of soul and intelligence, if we have experienced the up and down of an incarnation and we know transgressions that we may have done
We know what we've learned from that. We know what our motive and intent is at trying to get better. Then why can't we grant that discernment, grant that dignity to all the other folks in the world? If there is hope that I am soul and as dynamic force can improve my use of the physical and the psychic and all the other aspects of life, so too, those around us that seem to be in most chaos, most violence, most transgressions, there's still hope for them. There is soul, and at heart, we are one with them.
We just read recently that there are more people leaving organized religion than ever before, but that they are still saying that they are, that they still are spiritual. Now, what that means, I don't know. So we wonder if that would be helpful or not. I mean, for the future.
As we look around society right now, there is an interesting phenomenon. There's more and more individuals leaving organized religions. There are more and more individuals, at least in this nation, leaving political parties and declaring them independent and free thinkers. There are more and more folks leaving jobs saying, you know what, I'm going to be self-employed. I'm going to find my way and make my way, and I'm going to face this future. Each one of those strains of thought represent a manifestation of the sense of hope. I am. I can learn this. I can retreat from the dictates of others. I can retreat from mass media. I can retreat from leaning on other thought leaders or religious teachers, and I can make my own way. And many, many, many of them do so altruistically, not selfishly, but selflessly. There's great hope in that. We may be stumbling and bumbling. Circumstances may seem very, very grim in this dark age of the Kali Yuga. But remember the phrase, hope springs eternal, that line from Pope's poem in the late 1700s, An Essay on Man, that optimistic philosophy where, yes, absolute justice means we face all results, all responsibilities of our action, but there's hope because from the manure can come beautiful blossoms. SL and then MJW?
The question arose that how can you teach a child who is not yet fully self-conscious that they are souls? And when we were listening to that comment about how much self-reliance and independence there seems to be percolating in our society these days, even from the age of 2 and 3, we know how children say, no, I don't want to do that, or I want to do it this way. You can sit down with a child and say, you know how when I told you something, you said you didn't want to do, you wanted to make a, you made a choice. You decided how you wanted to do things. That's what I mean by you being a soul, because a soul can make choices. And you can teach that from a very early age. And of course, that realization gets to be more and more true for the individual as they grow.
And if we remember the true meaning of education, the process is drawing what's inside out. So the premise in this philosophy is that the soul that is using that child, the soul that will have more and more and more power as life proceeds, that soul already knows that. What we're doing is reminding the soul in the very, very young child, or maybe reminding someone in the struggle of life that seems so dismal at present. MJW, your hand was up.
It was. So we look around the world and we see suffering, lots of it. But that's necessary for those souls. Now, we don't should never judge, because we don't know. We don't know where that soul came from, just like we don't have knowledge of our own past lives. But we are taught in the philosophy that we all have something to do with the creation of the world as it is today. Mm-hmm. So we're guilty of a lot of things, but we're not ready for that knowledge, which was brought out by the first speaker, until we can handle it. But in the meantime, we just have to do our best. And it's much better to have an attitude of hope than of hopelessness, because hopelessness is, it manifests. It definitely does. And if it's a cramping, we're partially blinded. And the whole picture is one of evolution and progression. We go back sometimes, but then we go forward. So our society today, of course, in the Kali Yuga is rapidly, rapidly changing, and a lot of people are misplaced, and it is sad, but we just do our best. We're only responsible for our efforts. That's all. And it only matters now. We live in the eternal now, so we can do something about this now. It's always now. It's never not now.
It's always now.
That's the whole idea of the doctrine of hope, is that if we teach children at an early age to make choices, but to let them know that those choices have responsibilities to go along with them, because we know that some of the educational systems don't give children choices. They're kind of given rote education, but they need to be able to make their own choices and to learn to accept those responsibilities of the choices that they make. And if they learn to do that at an early enough age, hopefully by the time they become adults, then they'll be more responsible adults, and they won't take things that people tell them on face value. They'll be able to be critical thinkers, and that's what we need more of.
You're here.
Also, it's not just about raising tiny children, is it? The more time that we spend looking out at the cockamamie world, and the more time we pessimistically react to whatever negatives we perceive, that's the less time we have while conscious on this plane to work within, to reach within, to become spiritual, to become soulful, to become a kind of a light. If we can work on our own inner and hold an optimistic, hopeful point of view, yes, there is karma. It's not a deific outside source. It's a very natural cause and effect law. There's a science of living. Yes, I'm responsible. And I'm working through some conditions that may not be the best, or the sudden realization of, oh, didn't I have myself fooled? What was my real intent in that thought, or that word, or that deed? Leaning in that process, we become exemplars in our thought, word, and deed to other adults. We begin to generate the kind of electromagnetic spiritual force that is needed by other seekers who may be very constricted, may be very, very lost in pessimism or pain or superstition right now, but they're beginning to look up and around to see, what is this all about? What else is there? What else can I be? Is there somebody else thinking along these lines? For each of us this morning, how did we arrive here? What was our childhood training in terms of religious tradition, our educational experience? What kind of mistakes did we make in our personal or professional lives? Isn't there still hope as long as there's breath? Aren't we here and continuing to grow in knowledge, if not full wisdom and understanding? SL?
We just wanted to bring out one other aspect of the doctrine of hope. Yes, this is a life of suffering. We don't think we suffer as much as the animal kingdom. Not only do they prey upon one another, but the human being is their worst predator in many different ways. Does the doctrine of reincarnation and karma, soul evolution, offer hope to these beings?
Unmute, MHW. I can see you want to talk.
Well, for one thing, it's time for the meeting to be over, and that's like a whole class. But no, the animals have their own reincarnation and karma. It's a it's a whole different thing. I mean, they have a but their karma and reincarnation isn't based on choice. It's more of a group karma that happens to them, and it's not like they happen to be in the street at the same time you were driving down the highway and hit them, kind of a thing. But it's, you know, we're actually over time. But I wish we could answer that. I don't know. I guess we should end, but we can't really go into that right now. I'm sorry.
But it would be a good point to research for all of us.
Yes. a thought we can carry around with us.
Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Wednesday night, right? Yes. November 17th, an auspicious beginning. The TS was founded in 1875. November 17th, the Philadelphia ULT Lodge was founded. And November 17th, 2021, ULT Philadelphia Theosophy Hall will open in a new format, inclusive, available,
thank
and
you.
Vital for one and all. See you Wednesday night.
Steve, can you stay on for a minute?
Evolution of the Earth.
Oh, Steve, thank you very much.
Steve, can you stay on for a minute? Okay. I just wanted to try the camera out. Oh, okay. Always got.
Okay, go ahead.
It's still showing recording on me, on mine.
Okay.